The Farm Advisory Service Podcast. Audio advice on livestock, crops and soils, environment, rural business, and more. Brought to you in association with the Scottish Government.
Hello, Stephen. How are you doing?
Hello, Alec. I'm doing fine.
Good, good. Thanks, Stephen, for taking the opportunity to sit down with us and have a chat about this. Wet weather planning here, particularly in Ayrshire, has been a big deal this year, and it is something that we wanted to cover within the slurry management and application project that we're currently working on. So, no, I really appreciate this.
No, that's not a problem. I always like to take the opportunity to be able to give advice and provide information to the farming community.
Can you just lay out for those who might be listening that aren't aware the kind of works that go on for yourself and for the organisation more broadly?
Yeah, that's not a problem. Well, I suppose talking about myself and my team, I have a team of 15 staff that specialise in agricultural interaction and engagement. We work across the whole of Scotland. I have staff in 11 different SEPA offices across Scotland. The team was set up to try and improve consistency in terms of environmental regulation on farms and to provide better education and better advice to farmers. The staff within the team are all either ex-farmers, sons and daughters, or have been involved in the farming community for a considerable period of time. So they can speak the language, which makes it an awful lot easier, and they understand what the industry is actually about. So the team itself, we work in priority catchments. We've got 57 priority catchments across the country. And in those catchments, we do one-to-one interaction with land managers. And that sort of inspection looks at the steadying issues as well as land-based activities. And we provide advice to the farmers on the environmental legislation that they need to comply with. Like many things, farmers have a lot of legislation that they have to comply with, and the environmental side of things is sometimes slips down the ladder a wee bit, and it's just a reminder of how they need to operate on the ground, and we give some advice on that as we go around those particular farms. Other areas of SEPA work on, you know, dealing with Scottish water, dealing with larger industries in terms of pollution prevention, whilst we also look at natural flood management has come into our remit. And we also have the science side of SEPA, which undertakes ecology and water samples and enables us to get a picture of what the environment's actually like, which we need to report to Scottish Government on a regular basis. So that's the kind of operations that SEPA actually undertake.
Good, good. And I mentioned at the very start there, this podcast will feed into the series Slurry Management and Application that we've been doing as part of the Farm Advisory Service. Is it your perception, Stephen, that last year or January, February this year was particularly wet? Are we likely to see the same kind of scenario this year again? And what are you guys doing to prepare for that?
Yeah, we have noticed over the last probably since about 2011, to be perfectly honest, that the winters are getting progressively wetter and coming into the spring is getting progressively wetter. We talk about last year, November, December, early January, we had 605 millimetres of rain in Ayrshire over that time period, where we'd usually expect on an average year to have somewhere in the region between 350 and 400 millimetres of rain. So that has a consequence on the farmers, and especially livestock farmers and those that are working in a slurry operation and have silage pits. Because a lot of the rainfall that falls onto pits and falls onto yard areas ends up in the slurry storage systems. And with that excessive amount of rain, then it does cause problems in terms of having adequate storage. Since 2011, when we first started to see the pressures that some of these livestock farmers were under, especially Ayrshire and Dumfries and Galloway, with regards to slurry storage, we started to do these one-to-one farm inspections within what we call our priority catchments. And the priority catchments in Ayrshire are the River Aire, the River Doon, the Irvine, the Garnock, some of the coastal catchments up around Salcoats and the Girvan, for example. Now, within those catchments, we've been working with farmers and, you know, identifying areas that they could possibly improve on their steading to help with maybe shedding clean water away from dirty yard areas, repairing roof runs and downcomers to make sure they discharge into a drain and not onto a yard, which then goes into the slurry storage system. But we've also been working with farmers over putting additional slurry storage on farms. And since 2011, we've seen a considerable increase in the amount of storage and stores that have been put onto Ayrshire and Dumfries and Galloway farms. And those facilities are still going in at this present point in time, some under grant and some under the farmers' own financial schemes. So we've seen a vast improvement in these particular areas. I cast my mind back to when I first started in SEPA, around about 1995. We worked in the Water of Coyle catchment in Ayrshire. And at that time, probably the average slurry storage was about 3 months on the farms in that particular catchment. We went back in that catchment probably about 2018, and our average storage in those particular farms, going back to those same farms, between 5 and 6 months slurry storage. So farmers have been increasing slurry storage over a period of time, which is great, which enables them to apply that material, that good organic fertilizer, at the right time and in the right conditions. But there will be some years when ultimately rainfall is excessive and they will be struggling.
So, Stephen, in the scenario where, say, I'm an Ayrshire farmer and the rain is battering down and my slurry storage is just not going to hold at all, what are my options?
Okay, what we would normally do is we would work quite closely with the National Farmers Union of Scotland, and we would take advice from them, because they get their representatives usually contact them and say, look, I'm struggling, I'm under pressure here, is there anything that you can do, can you talk to SEPA? And we would take that advice on board. And what we'd be saying to farmers would be, ultimately the last resort at the present point in time is to consider application to land, especially when ground conditions are unsuitable. We would ask them to have a look to see if there were other options, maybe a neighbour that may maybe not using a store, or maybe a neighbour's got a new store which is excessively large and maybe some spare capacity in it at that present point in time. If that's unfeasible, are there any anaerobic digestion plants that may be looking for that sort of feedstock in close proximity to their farm? Could they take it there and you know get the benefit out of it from that perspective? If that fails, then I think we are looking at some kind of dispensation with the farmer and try to work around those particular areas. Ultimately, we would like them to have considered removing some clean water that may be falling into those particular areas by initially improving, say, downcomers and roof runs, trying to shed surface water which is clean away from dirty yard areas, which sometimes they can do, sometimes they can't do. Those are probably mitigation measures that need to be undertaken during early spring, summertime, in 1 year for the benefits on the next year and the year after that. So those are the sort of things that we would be looking at. If those failed, then we would be looking to have some kind of say dispensation, and we would work with the farmers on that. The kind of thing that we'd be looking at would be to get the farmer to identify probably his driest fields on a steading or on the unit itself, and look to see how much slurry that he would need to apply to give him maybe a working capacity of 3 to 4 weeks. We wouldn't want to see any more than probably 20 meters cubed per hectare applied, and we would make sure that they had a good buffer away from watercourses, probably a minimum of about 30 meters, and also probably look towards having very gently sloping fields, just to try and prevent any runoff entering the water environment.
In terms of farm steading planning and RAMS maps, how important are they as a management tool for wet weather planning?
I think that's some of the most important aspects that we look at when we're out on the steading. We would often say to farmers that just repairing a roof rowan and a downcomer and making sure it goes into a drain will save a considerable amount of water, say, shedding onto a yard area, a collection yard area for a dairy system that then flows into the slurry storage system. You know, some of these sheds are excessively large now, and even half the side of a roof coming off that can exacerbate the slurry storage system quite quickly. Farmers would say to you as well, you know, that the cows rub up against that downcomer and it gets broken all the time. It's a continual maintenance problem. These are simple and cheap maintenance and mitigation measures that can be put in place to prevent that that clean water entering the dirty water system. And it may be this: they need to protect that downcomer moving forward. So those even using a sleeping policeman or some kind of mechanism to divert clean water away from dirty yards is very, very important, because ultimately what we're trying to do is maintain the sturdy storage capacity that they have on the farm. And if they can remove any of that particular water, then well and good. What farmers also need to think about is what other options are available to them. We have a system called the constructed farm wetland. Okay, it takes up a wee bit of land away from the farming system, but it enables farmers to shed what we call lightly contaminated drainage, i.e. say winter runoff from a silage pit or winter runoff from a midden that would be potentially being collected on a farm, to this constructed farm wetland system that treats it and then discharges it to the water environment. Just by removing, say for example, a silage pit, a normal size silage pit, you can probably, over the winter period, from that silage pit going into your slurry storage system, probably have a ring or maybe more of rainwater. And to shed that away into a constructed farm wetland, it will give you that extra capacity. We've tried to do some calculations, but each farm is individual and each farm operates in a different manner. But we've kind of looked at either removing that rainwater from a silage pit can probably take a farm that may be sitting at 3 months slurry storage up to five and a half months slurry storage, depending on the size and the operation, or even potentially roofing, but that's a particularly costly area to go into. In terms of RAMs, risk assessment for manures and slurries, they're very, very important. And these are tools which just aren't for the farmer, but are for the contractor that actually appears on the farm to spread the slurry or the manure. Each farmer that has a RAMS should in theory be providing his contractor with that RAMS, because it provides him with information on the fields, the slope of the field, proximity of water courses. And therefore, the contractor will know where the potential risky areas actually are, and maybe where he needs to maybe provide a bigger buffer on a more sloping field, or he may need to just maybe because of soil conditions in that particular time, a larger buffer area. So they are important, and they do need to be used on a regular basis.
And you touched very, very briefly there on the use of grass margins and buffer strips in wet conditions. What specifically is it that makes them so valuable?
Well, in wet conditions, when the ground's waterlogged and you apply anything, whether it be silage, whether it's from silage pit or whether it be slurry, any further rainfall on that generates a flow in the field. So in essence, once you get a sheet flow going over the surface of the field, it will take what the farmers actually applied onto that field, so the slurry. So the nutrients and phosphates and bacteria that he's applied will end up in the water environment. The minimum buffer that is required, as we all know, is 10 meters from the top of the bank. But when you're talking about when ground conditions are a wee bit wetter, and maybe you're having to apply on a more steeper slope in the field, a bigger incline, farmers and contractors should be considering maybe giving a little bit bigger buffer so as to prevent any runoff coming off that particular field after a rainfall event, especially when ground conditions are unsuitable. But these are really extreme situations. You know, ultimately, we'd be looking to farmers to comply with that general boundary rule 18 and to be spreading their organic fertilisers when ground conditions are actually more suitable. And that then leads on to farmers need to plan for these situations. You know, I think one of the things farmers should be doing is not waiting till their slurry store is 2 inches off the top before considering they need to apply onto land. They should be looking at it as a whole winter planning process, keeping an eye on the slurry store, how it's building up, what the forecast like for the next week or so or 2 or 3 days, what can ground conditions are actually look at like at this period in time, are they going to improve, and take the opportunities when, you know, the ground conditions are not waterlogged, they're not frozen, and maybe can apply a bit of slurry onto the ground. That is only when they're under extreme, you know, coming to that period of maybe getting under pressure. As I said earlier, most of the farmers that we're going out to see, they've increased their slurry storage and will be in a position to get them through most of the winter period without being under too much pressure.
Do we know, Stephen, how many days are required for improved grass pasture to take up slurry or for it to dissipate into the soil?
That is a very, very good question. Not off the top of our heads, and I suppose it depends exactly on the type of soil structure that you have. If you've got a sandy soil, we have seen a slurry application going on to a really sandy area, and we find the consequence of that either in groundwater or within a watercourse within 4 to 5 days, depending on the permeability of that particular area, if it's been over-applied. In a more loamy type soil, in a clay soil, the likelihood is it's going to be end up being a sheet flow. But ultimately, when farmers are applying slurry, they're applying it. They're applying that as a nutrient for the crop that's going to be in that field. Farmers will always say that they do see the benefit of applying it at any time of the year, more so in the spring. So, you know, ultimately, we're not 100% sure how long it takes to dissipate. But that's a very good question. Maybe some research should be done into that.
And Stephen, moving slightly away from the land on the farm and back towards the storage of slurry, do you have a preference for a particular type of storage on the farm? What seems to work best in your opinion?
I don't really have any preference, to be perfectly honest. I think it comes down to now basically the farmer's perception and what he perceives as the best option, and it should always be based on his decision, what he thinks is best for his particular farm. For me myself, I would always like to have a slurry system which is covered. It's probably going to be more costly to do that in terms of maybe providing slurry storage below ground, but in essence, by covering it, I'm removing any potential for rainwater to enter that particular system and therefore reduce my overall slurry storage capacity. I think when it comes down now to what farmers would like to see, the farmers obviously have to look at the financial aspect of it. And when you look at the financial aspect of it and you weigh everything up, probably lagoons are probably the most common thing which are going on to farms at this present point in time, followed by above ground stores and then ultimately new sheds with below ground slurry storage. But in essence, SEPA doesn't have any preference. I don't have any preference per se. Just if I was on my own unit, I'd be looking to have as much below ground as I possibly could.
And you mentioned covering your slurry store there. Is that a viable option for the majority of towers in Scotland?
It is an option. What we really would need to look at is the age of the store, firstly, and whether it is still structurally sound to support a roof. And there are various different ways of putting roof. You can have flexible roofs or you can have rigid roofs. The reason for roofing is twofold. One, we would always suggest that or recommend that roofing of a slurry store is a good idea because it's removing that rainfall that you get during that winter period. And in certain parts of Ayrshire and in Dumfries and Galloway, you could, in a winter period, you can at least write off your first ring in an above ground store just for rainwater. By roofing, you're excluding that, so you're actually increasing your slurry storage capacity. Unfortunately, the actual roofing of the structure, it can be quite costly, and that kind of a financial impact and aspect. But I think you've got to weigh that up over the over a number of years in terms of how much money a farmer would actually be putting out to spread that extra ring each year, in terms of diesel, in terms of tractor parts, in terms of time management, and also the impact that's actually having on his ground and soil conditions. Because the more often that you actually go over your soil when it's waterlogged, then the greater risk of compaction. And compaction is a particularly problematic issue in certain farms with regards to crop growth and crop sustainability. So there are various things that need to be weighed up against not putting a roof on and saying it's too expensive. It's weighing up the other negative effects that it could have in and around the steading and, you know, diesel emissions and things like that. The other aspect of having a roof is that you're preventing emissions. And with the big chat now within agriculture about climate change and net zero, these are one of the options that maybe will become available as a mitigation measure. So by roofing, you exclude water and you reduce your emissions.
And so this might sound like a silly question, Stephen. If I were to put a roof on a slurry store, presumably the water is going to run off that roof. Are there any considerations for where that water should then go that is just lying around the slurry store?
Yeah, there are methods of actually removing that water from the roof. The rigid roofs have a downpipe I've seen in some stores down south where all the water goes to one particular point. And because it's clean, it can be discharged into a field tile drain. The more flexible type roofs actually have a pump as the slurry comes up and the rainwater starts to to form in the actual roof itself, the flexible, causes like a dish. There's a pump system and you can pump that water out onto the field or into a field tile drain. It's clean water and therefore can be shed away. And these are things that need to be put in place if you consider the installation of a roof system. But ultimately, what we really want to see farmers is being able to store the material on the farm for as long as they possibly can, and therefore to apply it onto the ground to get the best benefit of that material in terms of a growth medium, a growth promoter, should I say. So ultimately, if we can, over a period of time, get farmers where we nearly are in Ayrshire and Dumfries and Galloway, getting more farmers moving towards the 6-month type containment on farm, they're going to see the benefit of that over the long run in terms of getting it onto the ground under better conditions, therefore not damaging the soil, not damaging the crop, getting more response from the material that's going on, but also probably in their pocket as well, because they may not need the same amount of inorganic fertilizer to be brought onto the farm to enhance the growth of their first cut silage.
And Stephen, we've seen Scottish Government provide a raft of environmental schemes in the past. We've seen rural priorities, the Agri-Environment Climate Scheme. We've now seen the Sustainable Agriculture Capital Grant. And there is great speculation and interest in a potential green recovery going forward. Are you hopeful that Scotland's on the right track? And maybe could you speculate as to what you would like to see in the future?
Yeah, I think the pilot scheme that they've introduced, I think that was a step forward, to be honest. I think it was providing options that SNEPA had been asking for, had requested 3 weeks previously. We'd always wanted the Scottish Government to consider things like roofing, consider better methods of application, as well as the EEC schemes that they had in terms of diffuse pollution mitigation measures. things like alternative watering and fencing and stuff like that. But also, you know, you just move away from the livestock sector and you look at what other options are there as well, in terms of maybe energy efficiency and better use of energies and better that sort of thing, even within the dairy sector, but also tractor tires and the change in use of tractor tires. I think these are all good options for the future, to be perfectly honest. I would like to see that scheme being developed a wee bit further, maybe ultimately working closely with the NFUS and with consultants to see what other options there may be available on the horizon, and whether those are technically feasible within Scotland, and what benefits they would actually bring. But with the targets the Scottish Government have set to get net zero in such a, in theory, such a quick time, and with agriculture potentially being able to reduce those over a period of time, and you've got a couple of those climate change reports that are coming out recently, I think the options that were on the table through that grant scheme are what's going to be required moving forward. And I would like to think that Scottish Government will be able to finance some of those and be able to finance some of the mitigation measures within that scheme, which will improve the environmental performance and the green recovery within the agricultural sector.
At the very beginning of this podcast, Stephen, you mentioned the Farming and Water Scotland initiative. Can you talk a little bit about that and what's involved there?
Yeah, this was an initiative that came about, I'm trying to think now, it must dating back and be 5 years, 4 to 5 years. SEPA had been working in priority catchments since about 2011. And what we had found at the very start of that particular piece of work is that we needed to engage with land managers on the ground, either through workshops, through attending events, and we also needed a mechanism of getting information out to those land managers in a paper format, which would be beneficial to them. Now, we'd worked with the SRUC previously, attending events, we'd worked with the National Farmers Union, attending workshops and evening events, and we decided to, with SRUC, lobby Scottish Government to see if we could get some funding to have a mechanism where we could initially go to as many agriculture shows as we possibly could over a three-year period, and also to provide information for farmers on the rules and regulations regarding land-based activities. So the general binding rules, things like the application of fertilizer, livestock activities on the ground, use of pesticides with sheep dip, that sort of thing. So we wanted to get messages out to those farmers in an easy format. And luckily enough, SRUC got some funding from Scottish Government to start a Farming and Water Scotland initiative. Now, initially that was one person from SAC and one person from SEPA taking control of organisation, of attending events, getting stands together, and then pulling in experts from each of those organisations to talk about a specific topic or topics at an event or at a farm show, which was working very, very well. I think in total, Farming and Water Scotland got to nearly 100 events over that three-year period, which is a mammoth task all across Scotland, small ones and large ones. But at that time, we realised we needed to be able to get the information out to farmers. And through Farming and Water Scotland, we pulled together with the National Farmers Union, with SRUC, with Scottish Government, what we call the Know the Rules Guide and Mind the Gap Sticker. And those were simplistic ways of trying to get messages out to the farming community. We did it on a hardback system, first of all, and then realised that we could probably reach farmers with new technology through having a web page. So we, SRUC, helped develop the web page for Farming and Water Scotland. It's held on the part of the SRUC system. That web page guides farmers to all the guidance they require in terms of what the rules and regulations are, what new technologies are available, what the systems we've trialed and put in place with regards to alternative watering, what mechanisms are in place for that. So it is a guidance website now for farmers, which is updated on a regular basis. It's a very useful tool. It also points farmers in the direction of where grants may be available, or were available, and what options were actually available, and gives them information and directs them to what SEPA does on the ground in terms of one-to-one engagement. So Farming Water Scotland is required within the whole of Scotland. It kind of covers a lot of the information that used to be within the old PEPFA code. That's the Code of Good Agricultural Practice. I think that was last updated in the late 90s, early 2000s. So, you know, Scotland was required to have a Code of Good Agricultural Practice. I think much of the information we now hold in Farming and Water Scotland and other Farm Advisory Service websites is that Code of Good Agricultural Practice that farmers should be trying to adhere to. So it's a great initiative. It's an initiative that still needs to move forward. There are tools there that the farmers should be looking at. And I think especially farmers, as they become more aware of the technology and the better use of technology, and young farmers coming in are more apt to using web pages and this, that and the other, that's where they'll get the information. And that is going to be beneficial to them in the long run.
Good stuff. No, it sounds very worthwhile taking a look at. And I ask this to everybody, Stephen. Final question for the podcast. Is there anything within the industry, Stephen, that you've seen recently across any sector that you think more people should be paying attention to with regard to wet weather planning, slurry management, or kind of proactive steps that farmers can take on their own farm?
Yeah, I do think there's potential for increased use of constructed farm wetlands on a lot of our more larger intensive dairy units and probably beef units. I've been working quite closely with some dairy farmers recently across the country who are currently enlarging or putting in new constructed farm wetlands. And the reason they're doing this is that they've got so much lightly contaminated drainage arising from silage pits once the clamps opened and that rainfall's getting into contact with it. They don't really want it going into their slurry system. They want to deal with it in some other form or fashion. And these constructed farm wetlands enable them to do that without really having to think too much about it, because they're designed to take that kind of and treat that kind of drainage. It also means that they're not diluting the slurry that they're producing with water. So they're getting a better understanding of what the nutrient benefit is within their slurry. So they're starting to plan better in terms of nutrient budgeting and actually implementing proper nutrient budgeting. So soil testing along with maybe slurry testing and knowing the benefits of that and applying it to the ground and to the crop when it's actually required. So I think there is potential, especially if we start to get more prolonged wetter periods or wetter periods at specific times of the year for the use of these constructed farm wetlands across a lot of agriculture. It also would mean maybe say for a farmer that was maybe struggling at 4 to 5 months, 4.5 months slurry storage, by removing that lightly contaminated drainage from his slurry storage system, he may well have maybe 6.5 months slurry storage and wouldn't have to then consider increasing or putting on new slurry storage systems onto the farm just by using a constructed farm wetland. So I think that's possibly something that I think farmers should consider in the long term. And it's a simplistic process. It doesn't need a lot of management. Once they're installed, they don't need a lot of looking after, more so than pumps and sumps, where you do need to make sure that they're actually operating on a daily basis.
And finally, Stephen, Is there any kind of emergency contact number for SEPA, for farmers specifically that might be having issues with their slurry storage, that might be under pressure as we move into a period of increasing wet weather?
SEPA does have an emergency contact number on the website. However, most farmers will know somebody within SEPA, especially maybe somebody from my team, especially farmers within priority catchment. So those farmers that are probably the more intensive areas of Scotland could contact them directly, or they could contact me directly, or through their NFUS rep contact SEPA. Most of the regional reps have my home contact number and my mobile number, so can get indirect contact with me on a daily basis from the NFUS. So yeah, there are people within SEPA. As I say, there's the emergency contact number, which sits on our website. But if you do know a contact and you have had interactions with SEPA in the past, I would go directly to that particular person, and they can either liaise with myself or put it up the tree to me. Or, as I said, alternatively, if farmers don't want to contact SEPA but are under pressure, they can come via their NFUS rep or consultant. It's as easy as that. And most consultants know how to get in contact with myself. As SEPA's land unit manager, I'd be the person that would be responsible for taking forward any dispensation or relaxation of rules and regulations during wet weather or frozen conditions.
Stephen Field, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Alec. It's nice to talk to you.